Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to the Potterverse. It's a podcast dedicated to the book and film universe, and soon to be television universe, of Harry Potter. So grab your favorite wands and time turners. Let's step into the night and pursue that flighty temptress adventure. Hi, everyone. My name's Mary Larson. For those of you who are not on the video aspect, and by the way, there is a video aspect of this podcast, so we're really excited. You missed out on the shuffle.
Yeah, I can't seem to get comfortable.
I noticed. Blake has been so excited to create this podcast episode back in video form. And I got to tell you, his nerves just showed that entire intro that I just did as he was shimmying and shaking and trying to find the right spot. Oh, my goodness. So apologies for my minor distraction. But hello, I'm Mary.
My name is Blake. Oh, man.
Yeah. And we are going to be delving into A Peck of Owls.
Mary just has no time for me.
I don't.
No time. Yeah. Your name's Blake. Shut up.
I thought you were still off kilter.
I am.
I was just trying to cover for you because I love you.
No, I appreciate it.
So, as I said, this is chapter two of our analysis of Goblet of Fire, A Peck of Owls. And here's the quote that I picked. "I see," said Uncle Vernon, looking from his white-faced wife to Harry and hitching up his trousers. He seemed to be swelling, his great purple face stretching before Harry's eyes. "Well, that settles it," he said, his shirt front straining as he inflated himself. "You can get out of this house, boy." "What?" said Harry. "You heard me. Out!" Uncle Vernon bellowed, and even Aunt Petunia and Dudley jumped. "Out! Out! I should have done it years ago. Owls treating the place like a rest home. Puddings exploding, half the lounge destroyed, Dudley's tail, Marge bobbing around on the ceiling, and that flying Ford Anglia. Out! Out! You've had it. Your history. You're not staying here. Some loony's after you. You're not endangering my wife and my son. You're not bringing trouble down on us. And if you're going the same way as your useless parents, I've had it. Out."
Oof, brutal stuff.
Now, I chose this quote because as we are doing this read along of the Potterverse, you know, we're looking at people through different lenses frequently. We're looking at Dumbledore through a different lens. We're looking at Snape through a different lens occasionally. And in this moment, I am looking through Vernon Dursley as through a different lens.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard not to.
Imagine Blake, a father, a husband, having owls treating your home like a rest home. Always there. You don't even want chickens, okay? What would you have done if there was owls? Puddings exploding. If your cakes exploded, Blake.
Oh, we would. Oof.
Yeah.
Okay. There'd be some hell to pay.
I love, by the way, that the pudding's exploding to carry as much weight as, like, Marge blowing up.
Or a flying Ford Anglia.
Half the lounge destroyed. Dudley's tail, lest we forget.
Yes.
Marge, of course, bopping around on the ceiling. Of course, the Ford Anglia. What they don't mention, of course, is what happened in the beginning of book four, with the tongue toffee.
Yes.
And that is because the ministry officials cleared their memory of that, which I'm kind of like, why didn't you do that for the rest of this stuff then?
Right. I know.
Like, how can you be pick and choosing? Oh, okay. We'll get rid of his giant tongue, but your sister bobbing around in the ceiling.
Yeah, that's a problem. Well, you know what? We'll leave that there.
Yeah. A flying car. We'll leave it.
Well, let's get into the episode here in a little bit, but I just want to call out that Mary does have an addition to the studio that is awesome. And when we were on our Harry Potter world,
the Wizarding World, we were down there in October, which, by the way, going around Halloween time.
Oh,
fantastic.
Great stuff.
Highly recommend.
In that little sojourn, if you will,
yes,
we did purchase a new wand for the family.
We went to Ollivander's.
Yes.
Our little lass was actually chosen for the wand experience, which is so exciting.
That was not planned. It was just, she just happened to get picked.
There was no planning.
Yeah,
nobody gets to like plan. And so both of our children got interactive wands, and I knew which one I wanted. I wanted the wand for my favorite character.
Oh, yeah, 100%. But we didn't know where it was. And then all of a sudden, we saw it in this. Hey, you know, I'm going to go, again, because we're in the video here. I'm going to go to your single shot here, Mary, just because There you go. Why don't you pick it up and just show everybody what it looks like?
And for friends just listening on the audio podcast, I got Hagrid's umbrella, his pink umbrella, which of course has the fragments of his wand inside.
Right.
And I love it so much. It is absurdly large and obnoxious. And I got it in like the beginning of the day before we went on any other rides. Mm-hmm. So I would have to constantly be checking my giant pink umbrella. But it was amazing because in Florida, it's hot and sunny. And I was able just to have this cute little pink parasol. And then Blake could find me wherever I was. He was like, hey, I'm going to go get myself some, you know, candy or something or ice cream or butterbeer ice cream. And I was like, you'll be able to find me. You'll know where I am.
It's like a real umbrella.
I'm the giant 6 foot almost girl. I'm a giant in my own right with a pink umbrella. So,
oh man,
it's our newest addition to the studio.
It's totally obnoxious. But you know what? When we saw it, it was on a display.
Yeah, and it wasn't even like part of the regular buying.
No, it was just like in this display, and I was like, hey, can we buy that? And I went to the lady that was there. I was like, can we get that? Is that like a thing? She's like, yeah, I think we got a couple left. I'm like, wait, more? There are more people like me that spent way too much money on this thing?
On a pink umbrella.
On a pink of freaking umbrella that I could buy for $20 at Target. Here, it's an exorbitant, it's an offensive amount of money.
It is.
It's offensive.
It is.
But you know what? 100% worth it.
I mean, if you wanted to just buy yours somewhere else online where it's a lot cheaper, I would do that. But we were just caught up in the moment. And I felt like I was going wand shopping.
Yeah.
Because I've never purchased my own wand.
No, you never did. You never did.
And now I did.
And we do have a whole set of wands in this house for each of our family members. They've grown over time. Hmm. But, you know...
This one can't fit on the wand display.
No. So we've put it in the studio. Because we have our wand display in our kitchen.
Because yes, it's that big of a deal.
We are that family.
Above the father and daughter dance picture. Friends, if you are not yet a homeowner, if you are one of our younger witches or wizards, I got to tell you, when you get to own your own home.
It's cool, man.
You get to do whatever you want.
You decorate your house any way you want.
Like have a full out 7-1-1 display in your kitchen.
Why not? All right. You ready to get into this episode?
Yes, I am.
Let's do it.
I solemnly swear that I'm up to no good.
All right, Marvin, give it to me.
All right, so this chapter, as I said, it's chapter 2, A Peck of Owls in the Goblet of Fire. In this chapter, there are tons of owls that come on in. They expel Harry from Hogwarts. Vernon gets so upset. Owls! Petunia ends up, that was a word, revealing that she knows what Dementors are. And then, of course, Harry is no longer expelled, but does need to stay in the house because he's going to have a disciplinary hearing with the Ministry of Magic. There's just tons of owls and lots of yelling.
All the yelling. So much great yelling.
And I do want to just take a moment and thank our friends at jointhenerdclan.com who have made this and all of our other podcasts possible. Mm-hmm. If you're not a member there yet and we bring a little Lumos to your Knox, you can join for as little $2 a month. Some of the perks include that you get the podcasts early, you get extra little special shows, we have extra podcasts that are only available to our friends at Join the Nerd Clan. And if you are a member there, thank you. From the bottom of our hearts, thank you.
And if you're a big fan of Succession, I'm doing my knee-jerk reactions to Succession. For you younger audience, you will not be watching that show. Yeah. But for you older audience, can't miss it, baby. Yeah. Don't want to miss that.
So, lots of things happen in this chapter as Blake adjusts his chair one more time. Bless your sweetheart.
Well, you know what? I figured it out.
I'm glad.
That my chair is slowly, like... decreasing in height because the piston, I guess I'm just too heavy. The piston is just, it's quitting.
You're not too heavy. We just bought cheap chairs. We spent too much money on an umbrella and all of our owl collection. So this is a pretty hefty chapter.
Yes.
You know, some of the chapters that happen are on the relatively small side. Not too heavy. I guess it just feels like it's hefty because there's so many different owls and conversations and experiences that go through. But what this chapter serves as is that little bit of a recap.
Yeah, we got a little bit of an exposition dump here with all of the stuff.
But I love it.
But I like it too because you know what? You do have a tendency to get lost in the magic of it all, mm-hmm. right? You forget that let's just, like you said, Mary, let's take this from a muggle's perspective. All of this stuff is happening because this kid has come to your house, a kid that you didn't even want. And now you're telling me that there's some mass murderer out there.
Yeah.
And he just happens to be looking for the one kid that lives in your house.
The one kid who has been guarded by cats. Let's be real. Mr. Tibbles. Right. Where would we be in this moment without Mr. Tibbles? Without Mr. Tibbles, Harry Potter would be dead.
Oh, big problems.
Soul sucked out of him. Thank you, Mr. Tibbles and all Park Kneezles. We appreciate you.
Yes.
And all of your furry friends. It does start, of course, with Mrs. Fig. And Blake and I got to listen to this chapter on our drive to New York recently. And I haven't heard Blake laugh so much in a long time listening to an audiobook. Because Mrs. Fib is
Mrs.
not...
Fib?
Mrs. Fib. Mrs. Fig. I got to tell you.
You're on Planet Zippy today.
I had a green tea matcha latte last night to give me a little caffeine for an event that I did, and it kept me up all night. So I am not, Prime Mary. Mrs. Fig.
There you go.
Is different here than in the movies. She is a lot more upset, a lot more animated, swinging her bag full of cans of cat food at Mundungus Fletcher, calling people names. And very, very different from like the kind of demure, wearing all that gray and...
Don't put away your wand, Harry.
Yes, yes. they tell me you were intelligent. Like, we still get that.
Yes.
But there's just so much more to Miss Fig.
There's a big difference in context and approach here, in delivery. Mm-hmm. The delivery in the book is one of, you are an idiot. Don't be an idiot. Stop being a moron.
But what we learn, of course, is that she is a squib. And squib, of course, are individuals who are born into magical families who do not possess the magical traits.
Right.
And they can do some certain things in regards to, like, hang out with them and participate in some things. But they can't do spells. I mean, she's able to tell us that as well. And what I find interesting is that the other squib that plays a big part of this series is...
Mundungus Fletcher. Oh, no. No, I'm sorry. I'm thinking about
Filch.
Yeah, I was thinking about the person that was with her. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. Filch and, of course, Mrs. Norris. So I just love that squibs have these cats with them that kind of help them with the magical world, you know, because they're not able necessarily to cast spells, but they are able to interact with magical creatures, which I find really cool.
Interesting.
And fun fact, Mrs. Fig... is a breeder of part cat, part measles.
Really?
Yeah.
Wait, is it kneezle or is it kneezle?
I don't know. Sometimes I like the K silent. But sure, kneezles. Like knee.
I mean,
but
it looks like it's mostly silent.
She communicates with them, and they're the ones that have been like scoping out when different people are on call for Harry.
Yeah, yeah.
This also leads me to think that potentially why there have just always been lots of owls maybe hanging out occasionally would not only be to deliver Harry's letters, but maybe to let Mrs. Fig know.
Yeah.
You know, like when there were so many owls in the neighborhood, maybe she was getting some correspondence as well.
Well, you would imagine that. Yeah.
Give her a heads up.
Well, all right. So I have two major questions that come out of this
chapter.
About
Mrs. Fig?
No, just in general.
Well, I'm on Fig.
Well...
Yes, go for it.
I mean, how much more can we talk about Mrs. Fig? She got cats.
So much.
She hid it from Harry.
So much.
And she had to make it miserable while he was there.
No, the Dumbledore aspect.
Well, that's what I was kind of getting into.
That is who he's left in charge. He's left in charge of watching Harry Potter, a squib.
I don't mind that.
Until he turns 11. And now that there's issues with his safety because Voldemort is back, he trusts a squib, a cat, and Mundungus Fletcher.
Well, okay, so now you're getting into one of the questions that I had.
Well, fun fact, there's no registry of squibs, so the ministry wouldn't have known that Harry was living across the street from a squib and she could be there undetected and act like a little spy
The fact that you just know that off the top of your head... Just here's a fun fact, by the way. There's no registry for squibs.
No!
I mean, I feel like Umbridge would have asked, are there any wizards that live nearby that we need to keep our eye on that may be hanging out with
Harry
Potter?
No, that makes sense. I guess.
But because she's a squib and they're not registered,
That's why I'm buying the fact that Dumbledore chose Mrs. Fig to look after Harry, right?
Yes.
He doesn't anticipate Voldemort necessarily coming back the way that he does.
Yeah, I think for the first several years,
you just kind of want somebody there to make sure that he doesn't, jump into a,
Well, then he doesn't leave. He can't leave. That's the main thing. Harry needs to stay with
right.
the Dursleys.
So you need somebody that's like part of that world that can exist in that world.
Please cue the Ariel music in your heads, everybody.
but you also need somebody that is understanding and aware of who Harry Potter is,
yes.
right? So Mrs. Fig, to me, is actually the perfect choice. Where yeah. Dumbledore goes wrong, it's Mundungus Fletcher.
Whose nickname is Dung. Another fun fact.
You know what?
No!
There you go, Mary. What are we doing?
Okay.
What are we, like... And this is the problem. This is the problem that we run into with every question about Dumbledore. How much does Dumbledore know,
mm-hmm.
and how much is he purposely doing, making these decisions? Mm. Does he purposely choose Mundungus Fletcher to be a part of the system, like knowing that he's a dumpster fire?
Yes. Because
all right,
okay,
all right.
I think that Mundungus Fletcher has his ear to the ground in the underlings of the underworld, and so for that purpose he is useful, and he obviously wants to be a member of Order of the Phoenix, but he's a terrible one, But he's gone because he hears that there's some stolen cauldrons that he can get,
mm-hmm.
and he goes and does that, and he's a disaster all the time. We know that he ends up leaving when they end up rescuing Harry, in a couple of books. So Mundungus Fletcher is not reliable. Mundungus Fletcher is not a great asset. But on the flip side, the Order of the Phoenix size is super small at this point. I think it might be like 7 or 9 people only.
Mm-hmm.
And most of them have real jobs. They have jobs at the ministry. They have families. So Mundungus Fletcher says, I'll volunteer as tribute. And maybe he just does like the crappy shift. Okay, you know what? Nothing bad happens at 5 o'clock. Like, let's just give him that one. But I think Mundungus Fletcher, in Dumbledore's eyes, was sometimes an asset because he could go into shady things and he knew about shady stuff.
Yeah, no. I agree with the value that he presents the Order of the Phoenix. Like, I see the value. But this is Mary.
I know.
I mean, we have to say it. Where's my button?
I'm not saying it was the right choice. I'm just saying I think Dumbledore, picked him and said, sure, you can come on in.
I don't have my button here. I don't know.
Harry freaking
Yeah,
Potter.
Thank you. I can't find my button. What are we doing here? Anyway, but it's Harry freaking Potter. What are we relying on freaking Mundungus Fletcher to take care of? Here it is.
I'm Harry freaking Potter.
Arthur Weasley has a job at the ministry. Kingsley Shacklebolt has a job at the ministry.
Yes.
Snape is doing all Snape things. Hagrid's gone. He's going off.
Go get somebody else.
He probably has been trying, and he got Mundungus Fletcher.
This isn't like you're not working at McDonald's.
But nobody believes him. When Harry goes back to school, everyone is anti-Harry. Everyone doesn't believe him and doesn't believe Dumbledore. So if you only have those few people who want to join your cause, you take what you can get. And I don't think that Dumbledore said, okay, I'm going to do this so that Mundungus messes up on purpose and something bad happens. I honestly just think that Dumbledore had very limited resources when it came to babysitters.
All right. Can I whistle past that graveyard?
Sure.
I think so. Part of me, though, knows that this is there for a purpose, and that is to set up what eventually happens with
Harry leaves.
Well, with Harry, yeah. Like, but also what happens with Mad-Eye, right? Like,
yes.
The fact that we get a
listen, we all have a Judas, okay? We all have when you do group projects at school,
yes.
There's a weak link. When you're on a sports team, there's a weak link. It
yes.
traditionally was me, okay? I'll own it. I'm not super athletic, but man, was I positive and a good cheerleader, and I brought great snacks.
Super positive.
I always brought great snacks, man. You want a Gatorade? You go get him. I'm going to be in for the last 10 minutes of the fourth inning or whatever, fourth quarter. I don't even know. See?
Mary. Anyway. The last 10 minutes of the fourth inning. Come on.
Shame.
Listen, while you all were playing sports, I was reading Harry Potter. Happily. Wishing I could play Quidditch.
Such a dork.
But that's what I'm saying, is that when you get a group of people, you're going to have someone who's great and is the star athlete and is the star one. Thank you, Dumbledore. They're going to have other people who are good at other things. And then you're going to have the leftovers.
Yes.
Especially if you're just trying to fill out a team. You take what you can get and you don't get upset.
You know, Manugis Fletcher is the kid that you used to place in right field.
Yes.
You know, just like get him in right field.
Blake, that was me. And then I got a bloody nose because I tried to reach it and it was in the sun.
Wait, what?
I had my glove up to catch the softball and it hit my nose. Like the movie The Sandlot. That was me. Real life.
You're killing me, Smalls.
I only did one season of softball. It's terrible.
S'more of what?
So we know why Mrs. Fig is there. We appreciate all of her time and energy that it went into taking for her to make Harry's experience poor. I kind of wish that she had told him after he became a wizard, like, listen, man, we're going to keep this on the DL.
Yeah, but she explains that, though. Like, she tells him that she couldn't have told him. Like, because then he'd be over there all the time. And then it would draw suspicion. And I get that.
And
I buy
that. Also, he would badger her to no information at this point.
Sure.
And now we see how much distance Dumbledore is putting between him and Harry so that there could be no brain reading by Voldemort, of that kind of stuff. So, yeah, Mundungus Fletcher, we're going to whistle past it. But as I said, there's limited people who actually believe Harry and Dumbledore at this point.
So what the conclusion that we've come up with is that Dumbledore, he's got limited resources in terms of the amount of people that are going to volunteer for the job. And
yes.
So, he's down to his last choices on hopefully a shift that nothing really bad
happens.
And
Harry's already stayed home for 2 months.
Yes. So things have gone okay.
Yeah. He's like, nothing. Harry's shown himself that he's not going to freak out. Maybe he had his top people on the first night. Plus, we have Arabella Fig and we've got Mr. Tibbles.
Yep.
So
maybe we're going to be okay.
Yeah.
Just get through the night.
Yeah.
Done. Get out there. Just make sure nothing bad. Like, just the kid, hopefully the kid doesn't die. Okay. Just make sure he doesn't die. If he gets a bruise, if he gets into a fight, whatever.
He just can't leave. He can't leave the house.
Just don't leave.
And what does Harry do?
I might buy that.
So, you know what's interesting? Is that this all happens because Harry left Privet Drive.
Correct.
I wonder if the Dementors were there like all summer, just waiting.
Oh, well, no, not necessarily, right? Because we know that eventually they were sent by Umbridge, right?
Yeah, but I wonder if she sent them.
No, she has a tracker on him, right? She's able to track where he is. How does that tracker work?
It's a magical thing.
Right, so I guess what I'm saying
the trace, you mean? Well, it's when he does magic outside of... Because he's underage, he has the trace on him.
Yes.
But the protection that Petunia has because Harry lives at her house, like as long as he's in their house and in their yard, like on their property that she owns and she is willing to keep him there.
Yes.
That protects him from all evil. It protects him from the ministry officials even coming into the house. Mm-hmm. So he's got this beautiful bubble. But then when he goes for this walk.
Yeah, because he's pissed off.
Yep.
Yeah, no, and I buy
susceptible.
That.
So that's what I'm saying. Like, maybe the Dementors were there multiple times just waiting. Or like you said, maybe Harry walked out. But it's not like the trace was activated because of a spell that he cast when he left.
Right. Unless there was when he brought out his wand.
Who knows? Maybe she likes cats. Maybe she has a Mr. Tibbles of her own.
Well, and like that's the other
an
explanation.
Umbridge cat.
Right, that's the other explanation behind this, right? So is it like... Does she have somebody just kind of is there another version of Mrs. Fig, but for the ministry or for the Umbridge side, whatever, right? Stats for nerds. But is there somebody else there that's watching, or
we may never know,
or the other explanation that I kind of like that I can kind of buy too is when Harry pulled out his wand, there was some kind of latent magic that neither he nor Dudley detected. Because remember, nothing happens until he pulls out that wand. Right? Like there's no indication of, like, Harry had been out of the neighborhood for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then all of a sudden he pulls out the wand and then there's the Dementors. Right? Now there are two explanations behind that. One, he walked out of the house. There's a trace. Somebody saw him walk out of the house. It takes some time for the Dementors to get there. Right? or as Vernon puts it, the Dementoids.
Love it.
Right? Or Harry pulls the wand. There's some kind of latent magic. Umbridge gets word of this and sends the Dementoids out immediately. And then they show up and then the whole thing goes to crap, right? If you had to pick one, which are you picking, Mary?
I just think the Dementors were there for a little while.
Fair enough.
Yeah. They don't need to eat. They don't need to sleep.
Yeah, they don't have to do any of that stuff. That's a good point. That's a very good point. Another question I have for you, Mary, about all of this, about the chapter writ large here, is Vernon wrong?
No, he's not wrong.
Why is he not wrong?
Because all of those things really happened, and I think that he is scared, and he says just as much, and he's afraid of endangering his family. So I don't think he is wrong facts-wise. I think he is wrong in his delivery.
Sure.
And in the solutions that he comes up
with. Well, when you think about the tenor of the conversation and how this all goes down, it would be kind of hard for me to expect him to be fully about his wits. I mean, again, we said earlier in the episode here, he's finding out that there's some mass murderer that's coming after this kid.
And some soul-sucking creature that Dudley can't see just attacked him.
Right. So, like, are you going to expect him to just be, wee, Hogwarts?
No, I mean, and this is what's so tough, is that obviously he is a very emotionally mature adult and doesn't handle...
I'm not even sure if I would agree with that.
Well, you're speaking to a child, you know? You're speaking to a kid yelling at him in such terrible ways, calling him names... just yelling constantly, hitting, you know, things, getting bigger. I just think that he does not handle his emotions very well.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Yeah. I agree with you. Like, yeah. In fact, Mary, I would kind of suggest that he is emotionally immature because he doesn't handle.
That's why I said he's not emotionally mature.
Oh, but I thought you said he's an emotionally mature adult.
No, immature.
Oh, I thought. I apologize.
Okay.
Sorry. I thought you said he's
emotionally
mature.
Okay, good. I'm like,
adult.
Blake, oh no, yes. So he's an immature, emotionally adult. But yeah, and that's why I read that quote, that we have to all kind of be reminded about this, that if this is your daily life and your family was threatened and all these terrible things were happening and there was a root source, and now that root source has pretty much a ticking time bomb attached to them. Mm-hmm. What reaction would you have? And sadly, you know, Vernon doesn't have an ounce of love towards Harry. So it's not like, we'll figure it out. It's essentially like Elsa and Anna's parents had an ounce more love for Elsa in Frozen 1.
Oh,
they fix it
yeah.
in the play.
Yes.
But they're just like, ugh, let's just lock you up and put some gloves on you.
Don't
you
think
weird
about
freak.
It. Don't come
Don't
out of
feel
here.
It.
Don't
Conceal
feel it.
Conceal it. Okay. So
what do you think about how messed up that
I know,
is? That
I
whole,
know.
That, oh, man.
They fixed it.
Ooh.
They tried to.
They definitely
But so he
tried
doesn't
to.
Even have like that level of, oh, wow, Harry, this is scary. Let's go lock you in your room with your bird and we're going to talk things out. He doesn't
yes.
have that at first. It's just let's get you out. And that's how I viewed it as almost like a ticking time bomb now in his house and for fear of his kid. We get Mafalda Hopkirk, which I just love this woman.
Oh, yeah. I love how she signs her letters like... What,
with best you, wishes.
Yeah, best
yours
wishes.
Yours sincerely.
Mafalda Hopkirk. Like, and by the way that Jim Dale reads all of this on the audio book, mm-hmm. it's phenomenal. However, big however, the way he reads Mundungus Fletcher, it is spectacular.
It is.
If you haven't listened to the audio book, you don't need to buy it. Like, I'm sure it's on YouTube or whatever. Go find Mundungus Fletcher in this chapter, as read by Jim Dale. He's read him in a way that he's like kind of sort of intoxicated. And
it's Hagrid-esque.
But just a little, like after after a few Butterbeers.
Yes.
That's the way that I feel it. It's great. It's great. It's truly a pleasure to listen to Mundungus Fletcher as through Jim Dale.
You know what? It's interesting to me in this chapter is we're getting all these owls coming in. Of course, at first it's, you know, you did the Patronus charm. You're going to be expelled. They're going to come and break your wand. And Harry thinks, okay, I'm going to just leave. This place stinks. Mm-hmm. And then the next letter that he gets is Sirius's. Arthur's just told us what's happened. Don't leave the house again, whatever you do. That right there, of course, is important because Harry could be in danger if he leaves the house.
Yes. Here's an issue that I have mm-hmm. with...
Because Arthur is at the ministry. Arthur's at work. And he knows what's happening instant moment, and he's able to communicate with the Order of the Phoenix. Arthur alerts Dumbledore, Arthur alerts Sirius.
Yes.
And he's on the inside there. So that's why it takes a little while for Arthur's letter to come on out with an owl, because sure. he's telling everybody else what's going on.
And I kind of get why Arthur can't. Well, here's what I was going to say, Mary. As much as we just had a conversation about Vernon, and we think that he is not necessarily wrong, though his delivery is off, I would suggest that once again, the adults in Harry's life kind of let him down in this chapter. And, you know, if you wanted to say that, okay, Arthur's at the Ministry of Magic, he can't leave because he's the mouthpiece right now. Like, he's not the mouthpiece, he's the liaison, right? Right? He's the one that's getting all the information and then relaying
it. Never mind. Arthur's letter is the first one that comes.
Well, whatevs, all right?
Again, it's the second one.
Whatevs. Stats
it's
of the nerds.
It's Mafalda, then Arthur.
Yeah. And then it's
Mafalda, yeah. then Sirius.
I guess what I'm saying is, and then even if you wanted to then argue, okay, well, where's Dumbledore? You could argue that he's going to the Ministry of Magic and he's trying to argue on Harry's behalf.
Well, Arthur's one is the one that I cared about the most because he says, Dumbledore's just arrived at the ministry. He's yes. trying to sort it all out. Do not leave your aunt and uncle's house. Do not do any more magic. Do not surrender your wand. I just loved that direction of him, of letting him know, like, someone's going to take care of it.
Yes.
Here are the things that you need to do to be safe. Like, very clear and concise, because he knows you were just told that you have to surrender your wand.
Yes.
Don't do that.
I guess what I was circling was, where are the adults in Harry's life? And again, I can kind of buy Arthur, and I can kind of buy
Arthur's
Dumbledore.
At work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's doing his thing. I get that. Dumbledore's doing his thing. He's trying to maneuver things at the ministry
Hagrid's
with Hagrid.
At the Giants.
Where is Hagrid, number one?
He's out with Olymp trying to get the – he probably
fine.
Can't even get an owl.
Fine. I'll buy that too. Number two, where's Sirius?
Sirius is – hiding at Grimwald Place.
Come on now.
What? He
no,
is.
No.
Yes,
no.
He is.
I know. I'm not saying that he's not. I'm saying no. That I will not accept that as an answer.
What did you want Sirius to be doing right now?
Go straight to the Dursley's
dog
house.
Dog mode?
Go dog mode, man.
Apparate and dog mode. Okay. But
don't even go dog mode. Just go.
The ministry officials are on their way.
So what?
So he's going to be put back in Azkaban.
He
it's
can
like the
disapparate.
Last place that he would want to go.
He can disapparate.
They caught him before.
Whatevs.
Not whatevs.
No.
He was probably told Dumbledore can take care of this. No. What would be terrible is to endanger Sirius Black, to bring him to a place where we know top ministry officials are going to be
heading. This is
to.
The only time I feel like I've ever been disappointed in Sirius.
And that's totally fine.
Because the way that relationship to me has worked up until this point mm-hmm. is that Sirius has done things from afar, but like he couldn't go to Hogwarts like during Goblet. I get that.
But he's not even part of the rescue committee when Aurors and other order.
I even get that
Phoenix,
too.
How do you get that but not get this?
I get that too because when it comes to the rescue committee, mm-hmm. they don't know who else is around. But at this moment, they know nobody else is around. They know. He knows that all of this is happening in a lifetime.
No, they could already be out there. They can't get in to get Harry because of the protection. So
right.
we don't know if the ministry officials aren't
But either
fully
way,
there.
You just made my point. They can't get into the house. Sirius can. Right? So
dog mode.
Go dog mode. Show up. You know, clear off the fleas.
Maybe.
And then get in the house. Make sure you're with Harry. Because all you've done is protect this kid. And I understand that he sends the letter.
But maybe Dumbledore says, listen, I can take care of this. It's not like Harry's going to be killed.
Oh, I don't know.
I can take care of this. I've taken care of it before. He did some improper use of magic before and was threatened, and it's fine. Maybe. I bet you Dumbledore said, Sirius, I got this. Stand down. I got this. I don't think Sirius knows how much Harry's feeling at this moment.
Do you find that the letters themselves...
They heard all... Because they don't know there were Dementors. Okay?
Correct.
So that's... I think that's what I'm getting at, is that from what they know, oh no, Harry Potter just did a Patronus charm in front of a muggle.
Sure.
Crap. Now he's going to get in trouble. He's going to be expelled. His wand's going to be taken away from him. Oh, crap. Okay? They have not heard from him. Hi, I was attacked by two Dementors.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's okay if Dumbledore told Sirius, stay, good puppy, stay.
The one person that I think acts in accordance with their character, at least as it relates to this book, is Harry, where he decides, I'm going on the run. Get me on the lam. See you later. I'm out, and I'm just going to throw away my entire life. I'm keeping my wand. And you all can go pound sand.
Which makes so much sense. Hello, Voldemort's back. And right. He needs his wand to protect himself. So he's done it before running away, and he'll do it again if he needs
to. The person that I thought of when I read this and I heard it was you. Because
Because I would do that.
You would absolutely
Fine,
do that.
I'm done.
So
I can protect myself.
So the thing is, if you don't know, listener... Mary is a Gryffindor, a hardcore Gryffindor, and I'm a hardcore Slytherin through and through.
What would you have done?
Well, what I would have done is I would have sat down, I would have waited. I would have waited and I would have thought first. And I said, okay, what are my options? What am I doing? How do I manipulate this to my advantage? You!
They're going to come take my wand? I'm done!
So... Mary jumps into things
I don't
very
have a
quickly,
lot of patience.
And she comes up with answers that sometimes are very good on the fly.
Yeah.
However, some of them are truly awful. And she just jumps and she does. Whereas I am the one that's like, whoa, 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 whoa. Everybody chill out. Calm down. Let's figure this out. So when I heard Harry just immediately jump to, I'm out. I'm like, that's Gryffindor. That is my bride. I find that funny. And then at the same time, when Harry's like, okay, never mind. I'm staying. I was like, also my bride. Because she jumps and then she goes, wait. No. I'm going to do the opposite now. And this is what we're doing.
And I'm all in. I'm so in that I'm actually going to speak calmly to Uncle Vernon so that way I can hear if people approach. That's how in I'm in.
Oh, my goodness gracious. That
Let's
is
talk about
so
these
funny.
Owls.
Yeah.
All of these owls.
Owls were funny, dude. Oh, my God. I laughed. The way that Vernon is interacting with these owls is tremendous. There was a line when he's like, wow, what did he say? He's like, these ruddy owls or something like that. I don't know, vamp for me because I got to find it.
It makes it funny because the title of this chapter is called A Peck of Owls, which doesn't really make sense because he was trying to say a pack of owls. But then you think about owls and pecking with their little beaks. There's also like a bushel and a peck when you're talking about apples. So it is definitely a unit kind of measurement form, peck, P-E-C-K. But that was more of Vernon's frustration where he was trying to say a pack of owls.
Here it is.
Let's say it's a peck.
Here it is. Harry tore a second. Hold on, sorry. Uncle Vernon looked from Aunt Petunia to Dudley to Harry as if he was hoping somebody was going to shout, April Fool! When nobody did, he opened his mouth yet again, but was spared the struggle to find more words by the arrival of a third owl of the evening. It zoomed through the still open window like a feathery cannonball and landed with a clatter on the kitchen table, causing all three of the Dursleys to jump with fright. Harry tore a second official-looking envelope from the owl's beak and ripped it open as the owl swooped back out of the out into the night. Enough effing owls! said Vernon, stomping over to the window and slamming it shut again. Oh, my goodness.
His sheer frustration that continues to grow with each additional owl visit is amazing.
And then
it makes sense. Once again, I don't think it was the right way to react, but it makes sense as to why he reacts the way he does. The tension is boiling within him throughout all of this. And then it comes to the danger of his family with a mass murderer. He's out. The other person that we need to do some serious talking about is Aunt Petunia, who lets out, oh, the Dementors, they're the guards at Azkaban, the wizard jail.
Yeah.
And then clasps her hands over her mouth as if she just swore.
Yeah.
Is mortified. Dudley, everyone's shocked. There's moments of silence because she has never talked about the wizarding world at all, aside from calling Harry's mom, Lily, a freak. And now she knows what Dementors are?
Yeah.
What?
This is a big reveal. Mm-hmm. And I will say I remember my experience with it, reading it, and being like, what? Stop. Like, we all knew that she knew that she had a sister that was, you know, like, we knew that she had.
We know she's Lily's sister.
Yeah, like, we knew that she had experience with the wizarding world. But the fact that she could point out and validate Harry in this instance where it's like, yes, I know it what that does is it alludes and it leads you to the fact that she knows way more than we thought she knew.
And I love this because this happens right in the second chapter of the book. You know, when usually you're filled with a lot of fluff and exposition and reminding about people and, oh, it's a dreary summer. And just to remind you, everybody, Harry Potter's a magical boy. This completely earth-shattering thing happens right here in chapter two.
Yeah, so...
And then she gets a howler.
Okay, so I want to talk about this too, right? We were just watching Succession the other day.
I was not.
Well, good point. I was. In Succession, the last episode that I just watched, which is season 4, episode 3, a major, major cataclysmic thing happens in the episode. And it's put in the episode at a timeline where it can cause the most damage to the show overall. Like, there's this thing that happens, and it just pfft, the whole show, right? Okay. And you would think that they would save this cataclysmic thing for the end.
For a finale.
But they didn't. They placed it in episode 3 so that the rest of it can just fall into place. Mm. And I kind of see that... I kind of see that here with Aunt Petunia a little bit, right? Because to have her acknowledge that she knows Dementors the way that she does, it kind of throws the whole perspective and lexicon of what we understand of the Dursleys just out the window.
Yes.
And the fact that she eventually ends up recognizing, well, she doesn't recognize the howler, but the howler itself says something that she does recognize, which means that she knows way more than what she's led on to believe, which means how much can we trust her? How much have her actions informed what she's done, and how will that inform what she does moving forward?
Yes.
Right? So this is placed in the perfect position.
And then
opinion.
Also now legitimizes what Harry says, because up until now, Dudley is nonverbal. You know, he's just a mess of vomiting, mess of, you know, being upset. And he also couldn't see the Dementors. So from all he saw, Harry took out his wand and all these bad things happened. Harry is trying to explain it, though, and it's making slowly sense to Dudley as to what it was. And okay, my cousin is telling the truth. But when Petunia does this, the entire vibe shifts because now Vernon has to take what Harry said as truth.
Yes.
And before it was just, oh, you're lying. This was you. You cast the spell. You're getting these letters saying you cast this spell. See, it is right. You were doing bad stuff all along. And this is when danger now is entered into the equation, that their son was attacked by something magical that had the ability to suck out his soul, and that the worst mass murderer who killed Petunia's sister is now back alive and is potentially coming after Harry and could potentially even be the reason as to why these Dementors are here.
Mm-hmm.
It changes everything. And of course now, Harry's mind is completely blown because not only has Miss Arabella Fig, with all of her kitty cats, now shown that she's a squib and knows everybody in the magical world, is buddies with Dumbledore, but now Harry's sitting here scratching his head saying, holy smokes, Petunia knows even what Dementors are.
Yeah.
And she says, I heard that awful boy telling her about it. And what was interesting, of course, is that everyone leading up to this thought she was referring to James.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, of course, what Harry thinks. If you're talking about my parents, knock it off. But we find out in the last book that actually she's talking about Snape, that Snape was a neighbor of Lily and Petunia's. And before going off to... you know, being in Hogwarts, he was telling Lily about different things in the magical world, including Dementors.
So I remember thinking, who is this howler coming from?
Mm-hmm.
Like, how is this a thing? Right. And so my first question is, who did you think the howler was from? Number one. And then number two, as I read this now, the thing that comes to my mind is, it's not that she is scared of the howler and doesn't want to touch it. It's she doesn't want to acknowledge it, mm-hmm. because she knows what it is.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like when somebody's showing you something, you're like, no, I don't want to look at it. I don't want to see it. If I don't look at it, if I don't acknowledge it, it's not true.
That's
it's not real.
About ghosts.
Right. Is that, do you get a similar feeling from Petunia that I do?
Yeah, I mean, and that a lot of that is fear, right? And I loved this quote. She was looking at Harry as she had never looked at him before. All of a sudden, for the very first time in his life, Harry fully appreciated that Aunt Petunia was his mother's sister. He could not have said why this hit him so powerfully at this moment. All he knew is that he was not the only person in the room who had an inkling of what Lord Voldemort being back might be.
Yeah.
Aunt Petunia had never in his life looked at him that way before. Her large, pale eyes, so unlike her sister's, were not narrowed in dislike or anger, they were wide and fearful. The furious pretense that Aunt Petunia had maintained all Harry's life, that there was no magic and no world other than the world she inhabited with Uncle Vernon, seemed to have fallen away.
Mm.
And from now on, things are different. Things are different with Dudley. Dudley approaches and interacts with Harry and has a better understanding and appreciation for him and also fears for him. Now Vernon has to have these kind of conversations a bit more openly because they have been ignoring that the magical world exists. And now not only, yes, does it exist, but it's here. It's knocking on Magnolia Drive.
Yeah. And I love how the chapter is closed out. And I got to give Vernon a lot of credit here, right, for what he does. Remember my last, Petunia. Aunt Petunia looked as though she might faint. She sank into the chair beside Dudley, her face in her hands. The remains of the envelope smoldered into ash in the silence. What is this? Uncle Vernon said hoarsely. What? I don't... Petunia? Aunt Petunia said nothing. Dudley was staring stupidly at his mother, his mouth hanging open. The silence spiraled horribly. Harry was watching his aunt, utterly bewildered, his head throbbing, fit to burst. Petunia, dear? Said Uncle Vernon timidly. Petunia? She raised her head. She was still trembling. She swallowed. The boy will have to stay, Vernon, she said weakly. What? He stays, she said. She was not looking at Harry. She got to her feet again. But Petunia, if we throw him out, the neighbors will talk, she said. She was rapidly regaining her usual brisk, snappish manner, though she was still very pale. They'll ask awkward questions, and they'll want to know where he's gone. We'll have to keep him. Uncle Vernon was deflating like an old tire. But Petunia, dear, Aunt Petunia ignored him. She turned to Harry. You are to stay in your room, she said. You're not to leave the house. Now go to bed. Harry didn't move. Who was that howler from? Don't ask questions, Aunt Petunia snapped. Are you in touch with the wizards? I told you, go to bed. What did it mean? Remember that last what? Go to bed. How come? You heard your aunt. Now go to bed. Okay, first of all, I love how the author puts the silence horribly spiraled. because you can feel that. You know what that sounds like. You know what that tension, not only does it sound like, but it feels like.
Yeah.
Right? You just that one sentence puts you right into this family room. But I got to give Vernon credit here. That guy turns on a freaking dime because his wife said, nah, he's staying.
Yep.
After all the kerfuffle about, you got this mass murderer coming, all this weird stuff's been happening, you're out, see you later. She says no, and instantly he just, whoop, boom, no problem, he's staying, go to bed.
Mm-hmm.
I got to give Vernon credit here.
Yeah.
You know what?
It's give him just that.
It's not an easy thing to do that.
No.
Not an easy thing. All right,
you know, I want to let people know, in case you know you have forgotten, that Dumbledore does explain this letter to Harry. He says, "While you still call the home place, while you still call home the place where your mother's blood dwells, there you cannot be touched or harmed by Voldemort. He shed her blood, but it lives in you and her sister. Her blood became your refuge. You need to return there only once a year, but as long as you can still call it home." There he cannot hurt you. Your aunt knows this. And I explained what I had done in the letter that I left with you on her doorstep. She knows that allowing you a house room may well have kept you alive for the past 15 years.
Wow.
So this is all included in the letter with little baby one-year-old Harry saying, hi, your sister's dead. She and her husband were killed by Voldemort. I have put this in place, this magical protection on 4 Privet Drive. And if you do not let him continue to call this home, which is what Vernon was saying, I'm kicking you out. This is no longer your home. There's gonna be.
So why do you think, knowing what she knows, right? Because again, you could see and argue that up until this point, you could kind of see the line of exit here for Aunt Petunia, mm-hmm. like. She's treating this kid like, you know.
Like poop,
right?
Like dung.
But now figuring out what she knows and understanding that she has a much greater perspective, even more so than what we originally thought just by her having a sister as a wizard, mm-hmm. as a witch. Now knowing this, why do you think she treats Harriet just so poorly?
Well, I think that grief makes you do bad things.
True.
I think that it's her grief. And then every time she looks at Harry, she sees Lily's eyes, and I think that's messed her up. Speaking to someone who you have been treated poorly by someone who was really hurt by grief.
Mm, good point.
So that's what I think. Good I think point. That grief, because in general, it was jealousy. We learn, of course, in future books that Petunia wanted to go to Hogwarts, and she grew very jealous of Lily when she couldn't go. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so then she decided, okay, well, I'm going to hate all things wizard and all things magic and marry someone who is the complete opposite. So there was that. And then think about the grief and guilt of that grief that her sister she never got to reconcile with, that she treated her terribly for... I don't know, a decade?
Mm-hmm.
And that decade, she's now gone. She can never apologize. She can never have a relationship with her again. So I think it is grief and guilt.
All right, fair enough. All right, you got anything else that you want for this chapter, my darling?
No.
All right, you ready for your different perspective?
Yes.
All right, let's get it done.
Holy cricket, you're Harry Potter. I'm Hermione Granger. And you are...
Mundungus Fletcher.
Mundungus, buddy. Buddy, you got some splaining to do.
You know?
You got some splaining.
Sure. Hey, listen, I'm not the brightest bulb in the bunch.
Uh-huh.
I honestly don't even think I'm that good at fighting off Dementors. So to be honest, like, it is what it is.
You would have done more damage.
Probably.
Maybe you would. We would have had,
probably.
Like...
Expecto...
But what?
Pumpkin? What is it again?
We would have heard had curses flying.
Yeah. Dumbledore knows that. I'm not good with the Expecto Patronum pumpkin thing. So, you know, I was told this is the easy gig. You get the nighttime news shift. Harry Potter just sits inside and watches the news.
You know what?
I was told I had the easy job. And I thought, every day, 5 o'clock, he sits inside. It's wicked hot. I don't want to be out here.
You got business opportunities.
I've got a business. Thank you.
You know what?
Thank you. You know, Dumbledore lets everybody else do their jobs. Arthur's at the ministry. Dumbledore's at Hogwarts. This is my job. You may not respect it.
Yeah.
But this is my job.
Last time I checked, yep. Order of the Phoenix, it don't pay nothing.
Zip.
Someone's got to make some money around here.
The only person who's okay is Sirius Black, but he's wealthy.
You know what? You're being slighted.
Thank you.
I don't
even get a cat.
You get nothing.
Nothing.
You just...
Just me looking out for myself. Dung's got to do what Dung's got to do. End scene.
Dung's got to do what Dung's got to do.
You're welcome.
That's absolutely the new shirt. Go to the MaryandBlakeStore.com. Get that shirt coming up real soon. I'd say within the next couple of days. Oh, man. Excellent stuff, Mary. Great job. All right. We got some emails
here as well.
Here we go. Let's get into it.
Oh, mail's here.
All right. This one comes from Lainey, our sixth grade listener. Lainey says, hi, it's Lainey again. I was so happy when you read my email. In Chapter 8 to the Quidditch World Cup in Goblet, when Mary did the different perspective, I thought Blake was dead with laughter.
Aww.
Yes, Mary does that to me, Lainey.
Yes.
And that's what happens when you find the person with whom you are most madly in love. They make you laugh. I do have an opinion on who said the spell when Dumbledore, Snape, and McGonagall blasted the door down when the fake Moody was about to kill Harry. I watched the movie with the subtitles, and I saw that Dumbledore said the spell. Thanks again for the podcast.
Thank you, Lainey.
Yes, we noticed that too when we did our commentary track, which is fair. But that doesn't mean that happened in the book.
Hey, let's see what happens in the show.
Oh, good point.
In 10 years.
That's something that we did not say. It's official, ladies and gents.
It is official.
It's official. There is a 7-season, 10-year deal that has been struck between Warner Brothers and J.K. Rowling, the author, and the Wizarding World production company, and HBO. And as it's going to be on what is now being rebranded as Max. So it's no longer HBO Max. Starting in May, it's going to just be Max.
Okay.
So, and there's no showrunners attached. There's no actors, nothing. It's nothing's attached other than, hey, this thing is happening. And it's going to be a 10-year long process for 7 seasons. So,
and if you'd like to know our thoughts about it before it was actually like fully announced,
yeah,
you should see the previous episode in this podcast.
All right, this one comes from Emily. She says, love all your podcasts. Just got caught up on the Potterverse so I can actually email you thoughts instead of talking to myself in the car about an episode from months ago. Two things, she says. I can't believe nobody picked Umbridge in the punch, marry, kiss categories. She is for sure the first character that comes to mind when I want to punch. To round it out, I would kiss Bill Weasley and marry Sirius, although something tells me my mother would prefer the reverse. Mary, if you were Emily's mother, would you prefer the reverse?
I didn't want to even play that game.
It's true, you didn't. But kiss Bill Weasley, would you do it? Would you be in on the Bill Weasley action?
I mean, give me any Weasley. I'm down.
And would you marry Sirius, or is he like too like broken?
No, would not marry Sirius.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
Nope.
Second, Harry not seeing the Thestrals at the end of Goblet of Fire is still bugging me. As Blake said, it's entirely possible that the author just hadn't planned everything out yet. But I was wondering if maybe there is some sort of delay between someone witnessing death and then being able to see the Thestrals. Perhaps one must have processed or accepted the death of a certain point before the Thestrals become visible, or maybe it's a standard 90-day waiting period. We'll definitely be looking for more clues as we continue to read. Yes, Emily, if you want to put yourself in that kind of logistical yoga to make that work, I agree. Maybe there is like some kind of fully processed waiting period. But I also say, I just think the author kind of messed that up. And that's okay.
That's okay.
It's totally
okay.
We
don't make mistakes.
That happens. This one comes from Ash. Oh, she signed it, an elder millennial, Emily.
Ooh, fellow. Are you a zennial as well?
This one comes from Ash from the UK. She says, hi, Mary and Blake. Firstly, I just wanted to show you some appreciation. I found the Potterverse when you first started it a couple of years ago.
Thank you.
I had just reread the books and was listening to a lot of different Potter podcasts at the time, trying to find the right one. Yours was my favorite by far.
Aww.
I love the format and found you both engaging and entertaining. Mary is hilarious and Blake has the most contagious laugh.
Oh, he certainly does.
I do. It's one of the things I'm actually good at in this life. I've since explored some of your other podcasts, and you are also the reason why I discovered Outlander,
yay,
which is now, what'd you say, which is now her favorite TV
it's
series.
It's so good. Coming back June 17th, baby.
I'm actually taking a 10-hour drive to Inverness next week, and I'm planning on binging Outlandercast on the journey.
Thank you.
I wanted to write in regarding the houses having air conditioning in the UK, as discussed on the chapter one of book five episode. Most houses in the UK do not have air conditioning.
What?
Even modern houses built right now don't have it.
Blake and I could not hang.
Blake, you are absolutely correct in the reason. We just don't have a need for air conditioning, as most of the year it doesn't get hot enough. However, it does mean that it gets very uncomfortable when we have a heat wave in the summer. Last year, the UK had a record heat wave with temperatures reaching 40 degrees Celsius, or for us Americans, 104 degrees Fahrenheit.
And no air conditioning? Ew. You would just find me in a movie theater getting all... Hopefully there's air conditioning in those places.
I know, you would hope so. You're just like, there's no relief if you can't.
Yes.
Imagine how sticky and sweaty and smelly everybody was.
Everybody's be smelly.
Oh, man.
Maybe you just get so used to the smell that you don't notice.
You know, one of the things I have a hard time wrapping my brain around?
Tell me, Blake.
Is the whole Celsius and Fahrenheit difference.
Yes.
And it's not that, like, I don't get it. Like, I understand it. But how can there be such a disparity? Like, 40 degrees Celsius is 104 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yep.
That's banana land.
Not simple math.
Like, what? It's not like, it's like, it would be one thing if it was like kilometers versus miles per hour, you know, like kilometers per hour is like, you know, it's obviously more, like, right? So, you know, a mile an hour is equal to more kilometers per hour, but it's like relatively close.
Yeah, this isn't even.
This is just like, yeah, we're just making up numbers. We're just making it up. Well, yeah, sure. Yeah. 104. But like, how can you account? Like, okay, if 40 degrees is 104 degrees Fahrenheit, yeah, right? Well, what's 41 degrees Celsius?
No idea, because 32 is, for us, is zero for them.
Yeah, ridiculous.
It's not like it's always 32 more.
Sure.
Yeah,
so, like,
math is...
how can you, if it's 105 degrees, is it still 40 degrees Celsius?
No, I don't know, Blake. The conversions throw me off.
It's banana land.
I don't think so.
There's not enough options. That's why that's why Fahrenheit makes more sense.
I wanted to give a shout out to Luke154, who wrote an Apple Podcast a review. Thank you so much. And a few others did, so we're going to make sure we get to those as well. Luke wrote, would totally recommend. This is the best podcast ever. I listen to this podcast every day, especially while doing work. This podcast is meant for any Potterhead, no matter the age. Would totally recommend. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. All right, Marvin, you ready to close this bad boy out?
Yes, I am.
Let's do it.
We want to thank you all so much for hanging on out with us. We're excited to continue to delve into this amazing, amazing, amazing book. As I said earlier, Outlander is coming back in just a couple of months. We have a lot of other podcasts that are going to be popping up as our shows pop up. And if you're a fan of The Last Kingdom, which is a show on Netflix, they just dropped a movie. So Blake and I are going to be having an episode about that on our Last Kingdom podcast soon as well. So we are keeping busy at Mary and Blake Media. Always thank you, thank you, thank you to our friends at jointhenerdclan.com. You keep all of this going. And on that note, my name is Mary.
My name is Blake.
Mischief managed.